What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Facade. I'm your host, Gavin J. Gallagher, and on this podcast, I explore the mental and emotional game often playing out subconsciously, both in your mind and the mind of everyone else in the real estate or property investment market. The key to success in this game is to master your mindset and behavior, to take control of your thoughts, your emotions, and most importantly, your ego. Welcome to the show. Guys, real quick before we begin, I want to quickly tell you about my new coaching program, Elite Property Foundations. It's officially launched as of the 1st of June, and it is now alive and kicking with members. If you are a novice property investor or you would like to be a property investor, this is the program for you. I guarantee it's going to take you from feeling nervous about what you're doing to being both highly knowledgeable and confident in your decisions. There's a load of features and benefits, so you should definitely check it out. I'm going to leave a link in the show notes below. That's all. I hope to see you inside. Now let's get on with the show. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode, and it's episode number 199. And so the big 200 is coming up very close. And so it is an interesting week and a very interesting day. We just heard a couple of hours ago that Leo Varadkar is resigning as the Prime Minister, or Taoiseach as we call him, here in Ireland. And so that's a kind of a monumental sort of bit of news. It was unexpected, and well, certainly nobody I know was expecting it, and certainly the news organizations weren't expecting it. But then after the referendum result, I suppose there was a bit of suspicion that maybe somebody's head had to roll, maybe not. Anyway, I'm not going to dwell on that, but if you have any thoughts on what it's going to create in terms of uncertainty around the market and stuff like that, I have noticed that straight away Sinn Féin are calling for a general election. I don't think that that's going to happen, but we'll have to wait and see what happens over the coming days. I do know that following Leo's announcement, I heard an interview with Micheál Martin, who is the Fianna Fáil leader and who would obviously be the coalition partner, the primary one. Obviously, the Green Party are in there as well, Eamon Ryan. But when I heard the way he responded to it, it did seem like they weren't going to be pulling down the government or anything like that. It looks like it's going to maintain its position. And that is obviously welcome news maybe for landlords, because if you are the owner of a property, you've based that investment on your expectation that tax is going to maintain. It's either going to fall or it's going to be maintained at its current level, where you at least have some sort of certainty of what you're up for or in getting, you know, what you can expect over the coming months and years. Obviously, Sinn Féin take quite a different approach, and they have made various announcements in the last while as to potentially dropping, like trying to reduce the prices of property. And, you know, there was all sorts of suggestions how they would go about that. But honestly, I don't know how it would be achieved. It didn't make a lot of sense to me, the suggestions that were being made. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. Anyway, if you have been following my LinkedIn or my Instagram stories in the last 24 hours or so, you will have seen that I was invited by Dublin Port to do a big long walk. And I mean, quite a long walk. These guys are working away busily on a thing called the Dublin Port Greenway. And I have to say, I was absolutely blown away by this piece of civil architecture, I suppose you could call it. It is an incredible amenity that is about to be opened up to all of the residents or citizens of Dublin in particular. And it'll be very nice from the point of view of a lot of tourists that are arriving into Ireland or leaving, having stayed in Ireland, that decided not to drive, but to take a bike or to walk or to, you know, hike or whatever it is that they've chosen to do. But to be able to arrive back into Dublin Port through such a really beautiful piece of architecture. I mean, what do we call it? Placemaking. It's just
The best way I can describe it, and obviously you can see some of the photographs that I posted to my Instagram or my LinkedIn, but I think I'm going to make a video and I'm going to post it inside my East Point, Dublin YouTube channel, because I certainly think the occupiers that work in East Point are going to be really pleased to have this public amenity open to them. It means that you can walk out your, you know, the desk, and you can immediately have like a 5K run on your doorstep, out and back, not having to deal with any traffic or anything, basically running along the waterfront, overlooking the Catalca estuary towards Clontarf and stuff. And on your right, as you're running along, you'll see all of the working port of Dublin Port. With the amount of activity that goes on there is quite incredible. Anyway, the best way I can describe it is if you've ever gone to Poolbeg Lighthouse, you know where the big Poolbeg chimneys are in Dublin, and there's a big long walk there. It's called the South Wall. And the South Wall is the pier of Dublin Port that runs along the south side. And it's a good 5 kilometres long, I think. It's a long walk. I've done it a couple of times with the family. And it's a little bit like that. You're basically, you just have these incredible views and you're up, you know, just a few metres above the waterline. And so really interesting place to go for a walk. And it'll be nice to have, you know, a corresponding wall to be able to walk along on the north side of Dublin Port. But it's not a pier wall. You're basically walking along this new greenway that has been constructed. And greenways, you'll be aware, anybody who's, you know, living in the Midlands or inside, you know, in the rural parts of Ireland, anywhere that there's a river or a canal or anything like that, they'll often build a path or a foot, like a footpath along that. And that is essentially what we're talking about with a greenway. And so it's really interesting to just have this new, I think it's the first greenway built in Ireland in like 100 years or something like that. But super impressive views. They've created these kind of viewing areas and galleries and stuff like that. And it's going to be a beautiful thing to have, like a 10 kilometer. Eventually it'll extend that to so far that running out and running back will be about a 10 kilometer run. And there's additional phases to be built. The phase that I walked yesterday was 1.9 kilometers and it is going to complete in July of this year. And like the views are amazing. And they're building an additional extension to that then that will run from. And the reason I'm so familiar about it and that I'm talking about it is because East Point is built exactly at the opening of this greenway. East Point, which I've been involved in now for 25 years, East Point has a connection directly from our land into this new greenway. And so it's a really fantastic thing for us to have the benefit of. But there'll be kind of a third part coming off it, and that will go in the direction of the Three Arena, or what used to be called the Point Depot. And so you'll have all of these kind of cycling and walking points converging on the waterfront overlooking Clontarf. So it's exciting stuff, and I'm pretty pleased that it's going in, and it'll certainly be a kind of a selling point for us in East Point. Now, before I get on to the next topic, I'd just like to say, those of you who are interested in taking up real estate investment or anything like that, just a quick plug of my mastermind and some of the courses I have. If you are at all interested, if you're listening in and you're thinking that you would like to be more involved in property and stuff like that, the mastermind, I just had a call this evening with my clients that are in the mastermind, and we were talking about this very topic. But we have a range of different investors in different levels talking about, you know, rates that they're paying, mortgages that they're drawing down, offers that they're making, sales that they're about to kind of make, all of that stuff. And it's great to be able to participate in those discussions and just learn what other people in the market similar to yourself are doing and thinking. And you can bounce ideas off one another. And of course, I'm there sort of hosting it. And so I'm available for any questions that you guys might have, if you remember. Anyway, no, enough on that. What I want to talk about, I just come back from Tenerife. And I spent a week there on holiday. And if you listened to last week's podcast, you would know that because I think I mentioned it. But if you haven't been to Tenerife before, I really thoroughly recommend it. It's a beautiful island and it's got the most amazing climate. And I say that as an Irish person who lived in Spain for years. Spain gets too hot in the summer and then in the winter it's kind of a little bit cold. Tenerife is like the same temperature almost all around, somewhere between 20 and 25 degrees, maybe 27. You don't get those really high temperatures that make it uncomfortable. And they've got, because of that, it's got an all year round sort of tourism sector and it doesn't have the ups and downs. And so things like zoos and water parks and stuff are open all year round, whereas other places have, you know, seasons when they're open and then they're closed. And it's referred to as the best zoo in the world. It's called Loro Park. I took my kids to it last week and it's just incredible. And then there's also this water park, which I think is the largest or the best water park in the world. It's been voted number one water park for something like 9 years in a row. And it's called Siam Park. And thoroughly recommend it. Now, obviously I have kids, so there's my motivation for going along. But having walked around it and stuff, it's just stunning. Anyway, I digress. The reason I wanted to mention Tenerife is because while I was away, I got a message in my LinkedIn, which, by the way, is probably the best way to connect with me. Although I do get a lot of DMs on my Instagram as well. But LinkedIn is, I think everyone should have a profile on LinkedIn. And I'll do a podcast on why I think that at some stage. But I promised to anonymize this person's message. But the reason I'm referring to it is because I put out a recent blog post and it was in my LinkedIn weekly newsletter that I do. I do a real estate weekly newsletter. And he wrote to me saying that it really resonated with him, what I was recently talking about. And what, you know, the long and short of it was that my assertion that time in the market beats trying to time the market. So time in the market versus timing the market. And he explained that this is exactly the case that he has seen. And he went on to explain, this is one of the longest messages I've received on Instagram or LinkedIn ever, I would say. But such a good story. I thought, you know what, I have to go and recite it here. And so anybody who knows my story about 2008, and the huge crash and the financial crisis and all that, anybody who bought in 2008, most of the stories you ever hear are about how it was a total disaster and, you know, anything you bought in 2008, you've lost it and you suffered the consequences of buying at the top of the market and stuff. Well, this chap actually managed to survive. And it's really interesting, his story. He bought in mid-2008, so we'll say July, which is around the time that I actually decided to move to Spain because I was seeing the jitters in the market and I was worried about the Irish market. And I thought, I don't know anything about the Spanish market, but I know I've bought a big shopping center down there and I better get down and manage that project or I'll end up with a problem in Spain and a problem in Ireland. And so this was the time that this chap bought. And what he did was he bought two retail units, or we'll say commercial units, and he paid 300,000 for each one of them, two of them. So that's 600,000 of an investment. And he had 100,000 in cash, so he had to borrow 500,000. And he went out to a bank and secured a 15-year mortgage for 500,000. He moved his own business. I'm not going to mention the type of business, but he had a business that required a premises. And so he moved his business into that and he rented the other. And the rationale behind that decision was that if and when he expands his own business and he needs additional space, he will have the ability of merging the two units into one large one. And so that was his rationale. It makes a lot of sense. But obviously 2008 hit and you start to feel pressure. And as I have talked about multiple times on this podcast, you are in a situation where the market is falling and over time just people capitulate, businesses go under, and this is what happened. And so he was involved in serving the property and construction sector. And so naturally he was badly impacted, and his clients in particular were badly impacted by this. And so a lot of his clients went bankrupt during this period of time. So the revenue that he had coming in from all of the clients prior to that suddenly dried up, and he decided he can't continue to, you know, pay the bills to basically keep this unit. So he moved back home. He had started his business in the garage at home, and he moved right back there to get into kind of survival mode. Now, his rent, he managed to rent out the two units, and the rent that he was getting for them, they were the rents were depressed around this time because there was oversupply in the market. And so he was only getting 80% of his mortgage covered by the rents, but he was able to make up the 20% shortfall out of his own resources. So he continued to do that. And this was, you know, 2010 or thereabouts. And anyone who is in a situation now with the increased rates that we're having to pay, you will relate to the fact that perhaps when you took out your mortgage, it was a nice low mortgage. And so, you know, the rent covered all of your payments. But now suddenly, perhaps you're in a situation where you don't have that luxury any longer. And now you have to support the mortgage out of your own pocket or part of it. But he did that for about a year, and then suddenly the economy is still falling, is still impacted by all of this kind of doom and gloom that was going on. And 2011 was getting close to the worst of it, I can remember. And he owned a lot of assets in different countries, and all of this was falling in value. So he was finding himself under pressure, no more than myself and many, many others. Then one of the tenants that was paying him rent in these units went bust and left him with 4 months of unpaid rent. That was the first problem. But then he discovered that in addition to that, they hadn't paid any of the commercial rates that you have to pay to Dublin City Council on your units. And so that now fell on the landlord, which was him. So he was in a bad way. Suddenly he's got almost no income coming in to cover the mortgage. He's got this big bill that he has to cover. He's paying, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul, so to speak. And in 2012/13, he decided, right, I have no choice here. I've got to go back to the bank and see if I can restructure this loan in some shape or form. So he went back and he managed to agree to a 5-year deal. And the 5-year deal was along the lines of, instead of, like, when you pay a mortgage, you pay interest and a capital payment. And you usually that capital payment is the same amount spread over, say, 15 years, 20 years, whatever it might be. And it's the only reason that your payments might fluctuate is if you're on a variable rate, it's the interest element. But the capital is always approximately the same. He decided to go interest only for a year. Then in year two, he would go interest only, plus he would start making a contribution towards the capital pay down of 25% of what it was supposed to be according to the mortgage. Year two, that increase went to 50%. Year three, it went to 75%. And it went 25, 50, 75. And then by year five, he was back on the full performing mortgage payments. And then as a final twist in this loan restructuring agreement, the bank insisted that he sell the property at the end of the 5 years. And the timing around this would be around 2018, by which time, you know, commercial premises and stuff, they were expecting to return to their original values, or at least that was the hope. And so the idea was that as prices had recovered, he'd be able to sell in 2018 and pay down all of his loan. Now, when 2018 did come along, he started to re-look at everything. And he said that the value of the two properties that he paid 600,000 for had come up to 400,000. So it's still a long way off, you know, the original price. And he balked at the idea of selling it at that loss. But in addition to that, because he had been making these capital payments over so many years, his loan now, the 500,000 that he had taken out was now only 150,000. So 150,000 on a 400,000 value means that you have equity of about 250,000 there. And so why would you sell that? Like, if it's bringing in an income, you're going to end up paying down the loan over a period of time. So, like, you know, as you'd understand, as you'd appreciate, he did not want to sell this asset. He thought, I'll just keep it, keep paying down the rent, and eventually I'll own these things outright and the bank will be fully repaid. So he told the bank that this is what he would prefer to do. They turned around, no chance. So then he offered to increase his monthly payments to the point where it would only take about 15 months to fully repay the balance of the loan. Not a lot of time. And so the banks, you would think that the banks would see reason in that offer. Seems like a very reasonable offer to me. But no, they did not. And this is where banks can be really, really difficult to deal with. As I was saying to my mastermind members earlier, you go and meet a bank and the bank are, they have relationship managers, very, very friendly. Hello, of course, you'd like a loan. Yeah, here you go. But if you end up in difficulty, you get transferred to a different part of the bank. And the relationship managers over there are switched around so frequently that you never have an opportunity to develop a relationship with them. And because of that, you find it much more difficult to negotiate anything because you're not dealing with somebody that you know about or that you have any relationship with. And so it doesn't surprise me to hear it, but it does seem very unreasonable to force somebody to sell when he's now clearly back in equity. So he said that they said that if he did not sell, that they would appoint a receiver and force him to sell the asset. Now, he wouldn't budge. And as it turns out, they quietly were in the process of negotiating with a vulture fund. And the vulture fund came along and bought his loan along with a load of other loans. And what, you know, anyone who's been through this will be very familiar with the likes of Arrow and Pepper. And there's a lot of different what we call loan servicers. And they're the people that were brought in to manage big, big loan books. If a vulture fund comes along and buys, we'll say, 1,000 mortgages from a bank, they'll do that at a big discount. It may be 1,000 more, 10,000 mortgages, whatever it is. Let's say it's worth 100 million in value in terms of the original loans. They might buy this for 30 million or something like that. So they're paying, you know, nearly pennies on the pound to what it's originally worth. But they don't have huge teams to manage these massive 10,000 mortgage provide. You know, they don't have the numbers to be able to manage that number. So this is where these companies, loan servicers, came along, and their job was exclusively to manage all this stuff. And so this guy went to the loan servicers that are working for the Vulture Fund, and he attempted to restructure the debt with them on the basis that, you know, these are new guys. They've probably bought the loan at a bit of a haircut, and so maybe they're more open to the whole idea. But as he found to his annoyance, these guys were not willing to budge one inch, and they basically just said, you either sell the property or we will have a receiver appointed to sell it on your behalf. And so he was under a bit of pressure here now, but he just decided, I'm not giving in on this. So he went into the market, started trying to find, are there, you know, lenders out there that are willing to work with him? What can he do to try to kind of figure out this thing? And the problem that he's faced, and I've been there before, is that when you have loans that are not working, when you're, you know, we'll say delinquent, as it's called, or when you're in breach of your loan agreement, then that leaves you with kind of a black mark. And any other bank that you're speaking to, when they go and do a credit check on you, they're going to discover that you are delinquent or that you're, you know, popping up with a red flag for this issue that you have elsewhere. And so their automatic response to that is, sorry, no, we're not going to do anything with you. That was until he discovered Linked Finance. Now, Linked Finance are, or certainly they were at the time, I must bring them on the podcast if I can, but Linked Finance do not look at the individual. They do not look at the circumstances. They don't look at the history. They don't look at any of that. What they look at is the capacity to make repayments on the loan. And thankfully, this was a performing property rental, and therefore he was able to demonstrate that there is the capacity to make repayments. So they agreed to a 3-year deal. And he thought, you know what, I'm going to have a crack at getting this down. So even though he owed $150,000, he went back to the loan servicers that are working for the Vulture Fund. And he said, you know what, I'd like to know, what would you sell this loan for if I was to completely clear it now? What would be the figure that you would let me clear it at? And they came back and said, if you can clear this loan, we'll knock 10 grand off and we'll give you it, let you out at 140. And so he thought, great, thanks very much. Went back to Link Finance. That 3-year deal you were offering me, I only needed 140 now, not the 150. And so was not forced to sell his property, managed to replace the loan, managed to get a 3-year deal in place. And by 2020, so at this stage, we're talking about 12 years after he had originally purchased the property, he had just completely cleared all of the debt owed on the two properties and paid off Linked Finance in full. And he did this a full 2 years ahead of the date of the original mortgage expiry. And so what, you know, I just think this is a fantastic lesson for a lot of you listening in. You know, a lot of people, they feel the pressure. They know that, you know, real estate, if it's done incorrectly, can be very costly. And if you don't have the mindset or the grit or the tenacity, you will give up long before you needed to. And this chap, who remains nameless, but I have a lot of respect for his tenacity here, he bought at the worst possible time. I mean, absolutely the worst possible time. July 2008, I don't think you could find a point in the market when the prices were higher. And then it fell off a cliff and went into 2009. And that's when there was just this complete meltdown. Everything was dropping like it flies. There was no debt anywhere. There was no buyers anywhere. There was only sellers. It was just a disastrous time. And so everything that could go wrong with this property went wrong. Tenants go bust. He had to move out, you know, stuck with commercial rates that were left over. You know, everything that could possibly go wrong. And it just shows you how having the grit and perseverance to just kind of keep on battling away, that's what got him through this. And so, in my opinion, mindset, resilience and tenacity, those are something that is just so, so important in this business. If you do not have those three, you know, if you don't have the resilience to stand up to the bullies, if you don't have the ability to take all of this bad news and still continue to kind of fight the good fight, then you may be in the wrong sector, because that is what it takes to survive the downturns that do take place. And I know a lot of you out there are now suffering from this. And I know it because I spoke at a talk. I did a talk over in London recently for a developer, a group of developers. And I just talked about my experience in 2008. And I talked about how resilience and tenacity is so important. And after I left, back on the flight to Dublin, I landed in Dublin and a load of LinkedIn messages from the guys that were present, and they all were like, Gavin, I really needed to hear that. I'm in the middle of a really tricky situation. Banks are putting really huge amount of pressure on me, and that's what I needed to hear. And so it's great to hear those kind of stories. And it just, it gives you the kind of the boost that you need to keep on fighting and know that maybe as tough as it seems, time heals wounds and you'll actually get through this and you'll be good on the other side of it. So I hope you found that one useful. I'd love to hear from you guys. Like, are you experiencing anything like that? Are you going through any kind of difficult times at the moment because of the interest rate increases? Or have you experienced anything along the lines of the story that I explained before? I know a lot of people caved in and capitulated, as we say, And, you know, it's understandable. It was just, as I described it earlier today to my mastermind community, I said it's like a death by a thousand cuts. It's not this, you know, one smack and you're gone. It's every week another bit of bad news, another demand from another bank, another legal action started on you. I mean, it's just, they mount up and it really starts to get to you after a period of time. So I hope you found this one useful. Would love to hear from you guys. If you have any questions, if you're going through similar situation. And I'm going to be back here next week for episode 200. So please do join us for that. And I'd like to thank you all for being in the community, for being a listener for the last 199 episodes. And I do hope that I'm going to be able to serve you for another at least 200 more episodes. And as I mentioned earlier, there is a lot of coaching and mastermind and various things that I offer. Behind the facade is obviously the podcast, but there is the Elite Property Accelerator that I've created on foot of all of the requests to do some coaching and mentoring. So if you're interested in any of that, please reach out to me. I am going to be launching another cohort for my accelerator. That's the higher level program. And when I launch that it's going to be a month's time. It's going to be probably the last time that I do that particular version. After that, I'm going to be going to a higher price level. And so if you are interested in getting in at this lower price point, please do reach out and let me know. And I'll be happy to get you in at this into this cohort that's coming up. It'll be starting after Easter. So it'll be, you know, probably late April, and we'll run for May, June, July, and I think we'll be finished probably early August, so we can take a bit of a holiday, and then I'll be restarting again in September, but that will be at a higher price point. So guys, hope you enjoyed this one. Please give it a like, and the last thing I'd ask you is a review. If you ever get a chance, if you get any value from these podcasts, please do drop me a review. And let Apple or Spotify or whoever know that this is a worthwhile podcast to listen in on. Talk to you soon, guys.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Behind the Facade. If you have any questions or topics you'd like me to cover in future episodes, please connect with me via the Facebook group that is called Behind the Facade Community. Alternatively, you will find me on social media. My handle is Gavin J. Gallagher. You can stay up to date with all of my content and the various projects I'm working on over on my website, gavinjgallagher.com. And while you're there, please do add your name to the Join My Tribe thing over on the right-hand side. This will ensure you're kept up to date via my weekly newsletter. All of these links are in the show notes below. That's all for now. I will see you guys in the next episode.